Wish we could forget some, but hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome. Very nice to be with you on this morning. We're playing great music this morning to honor our wonderful board op and the guy, Mike Bowen. Good morning, Mike. Happy birthday to you. It is really good to see you, your smiling face. I'm sorry you have to work today, but at least you can listen to the songs you want to for a few minutes. It's great to have Mike here, as always, and we wish him a very, very happy birthday on this 13th day of November. Good morning, all. Welcome to the program. I'm Joe Donahue. We have some wonderful panelists here, and we're going to introduce them to you in just a moment, and then we welcome you to be a part of the conversation. All you have to do is join us, jump in, write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we'd love to hear what is on your mind this morning. If your mind is like everyone else's, I bet you have a lot on it. So let's go. Sarah Rogerson is the Albany Law School professor, our dear friend. Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well.
It's really good to see you. Thank you very much for being here. We welcome the Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany. Bob Griffin is in the house. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Today is World Kindness Day. I will not be participating.
you're gonna take this World Kindness Day off? Yeah.
I am.
I think it's good.
So strap in.
Did you know your birthday was on World Kindness Day, Mike? See, isn't that great? You thought people were just being nice to you because it was your birthday. No, it's World Kindness Day, for goodness sakes.
They should know better than to put World Kindness Day during Scorpio season. That's all I'm saying.
Good point. Very good point. We welcome the senior fellow at Bard's Center for Civic Engagement, Ambassador Fred Hoff. Good morning, sir, how are you?
Joe, delighted to be here. Hope you're doing well. And on Kindness Day, I'll do my best to make up for Bob.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, try to take on some of the weight, right?
It's like filling in the Grand Canyon, Fred. Good luck with that.
All right. We did this yesterday, and we're going to do it again today. I think anyone who has been, you know, doing what we do, which is watch the news and paying attention to what's happening in the world, or maybe you were just waiting for us, in which case maybe you should think about that. But we're really glad that you first of all, we're glad you're with us. But if you're hanging in there, we're going to do pretty much what we did yesterday. There were a bunch of appointments that came down, and some are appointments, some are floating names, some are actually official asks that have been accepted. So we'll try our best. So yesterday we were talking about Kristi Noem. Kristi Noem actually wasn't officially announced until late last night. I don't believe that Marco Rubio has officially been announced. His name has been floated.
Don't think so.
But I don't think the actual press release has gone out regarding Marco Rubio, although it is generally believed that he will be Secretary of State. So then we look at where we are.
I'm sorry. Okay.
It's because it's little Marco and he's probably asleep.
We're still not ready for it, are we? Okay.
Well, it could be worse. He could be a canine handler in DHS right now.
Yeah. There. Nice.
Fred, I think it's your cue,
Bob.
Fred, to step
rather
in.
Yeah. Very nice. That is kindness, Bob. Trump has picked Pete Hegseth, a veteran who has absolutely no experience in the federal government or that. Mm. But he was a Fox News host, and he hosted not even the daily program, but he was a weekend anchor. And nothing against weekend anchors, for goodness sakes. But Fox News host Pete Hegseth has been named defense secretary. The choice of Mr. Hegseth, a dedicated supporter of the president-elect in his first term, was outside the norm, according to this coverage in the New York Times, outside the norm for a traditional choice of the post. And you probably didn't need me to say that. He is a veteran of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. He will now go on to run the Pentagon and lead 1.3 million active duty troops.
If confirmed.
If confirmed. The choice of Mr. Hegseth was outside the norm, but he was a dedicated supporter. And defending his actions, Mr. Trump's actions with the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, embracing his America First agenda and trying to withdraw U.S. troops from abroad and energetically taking up the cause of combat veterans accused of war crimes. In a statement announcing his pick, Mr. Trump praised Mr. Hegseth's combat experience and support of the military and veterans. Pete is tough, smart, and a true believer in America First. Mr. Hegseth is a co-host of Fox and Friends. He joined the network as a contributor in 2014 and has been the host of Fox's New Year's coverage for years. So, what do you make of this, Ambassador Hoff?
Well, I am indeed going to do my best to be kind in the face of this news, but it's a bit of a challenge. Look, the Department of Defense is a huge organization. It's got a budget that over the next 4 years is probably going to hit $1 trillion. It's got nearly 3 million people, uniformed and civilian, on the rolls. It faces tremendous challenges in rebuilding our defense industrial base and acquiring the capabilities to deter and, if necessary, defeat Chinese aggression. You know, now President Trump is fully entitled to nominate a supporter to this important post. And the fact that Mr. Hegseth is an Army veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan does indeed count in his favor. But his lack of objective qualifications for the job, never having been in charge of a large, complex organization, never having had a senior position in government or close to government on national security affairs, this is going to present the U.S. Senate, in my opinion, with a real confirmation challenge. We can probably assume that 47 Democrats, if that's the final number, will vote no. But there may also be a handful of Republicans simply unable to support the president on this nomination. But if he is confirmed, his choice for Deputy Secretary of Defense will be absolutely critical because somebody actually has to run this department. And even if there is a qualified and competent Deputy Secretary of Defense, it's the secretary himself who must advise the president on matters of war and peace. And I'm honestly just not sure that this guy is in a position to do that.
What do you think the rationale is in the sense of the president-elect to say this guy should be our Secretary of Defense?
I don't know that we can really come up with a rationale here that reflects a lot of deliberation on the part of the president. Part of what's going on here is that others who were considered for this position and who are objectively more qualified, Senator Cotton of Arkansas, former Secretary of State, former CIA Director Mike Pompeo, they turned it down. Congressman Mike Waltz was considered a possible SecDef.
I'm sorry,
but he's going to be National Security Advisor instead.
I don't think Pompeo was invited to the party, right?
He's not. He was eliminated from the party, right. But that's one of the reasons why there is one fewer possibility to fill this post.
Yeah.
Well, some of it, they know what Trump wants to do, and that's part of the problem. They know they have to work for him. So this is a guy that will work for him. I mean, this guy This is just from his Wikipedia page, but reportedly persuaded Trump to pardon three American soldiers accused or convicted of war crimes relating to the shooting of non-combatants in Iraq. And for his service record, he was a platoon leader at Guantanamo Bay and defended the treatment of inmates detained there. So we're going all in on war criminals. And that's what they, I mean, they want to be in that gray area, that flexible zone of international norms regarding the law of war. And that's exactly where Trump wants to be.
So then if I'm reading you correctly, that is then a more thoughtful approach as to what they want.
Maybe aligned. I don't know about thoughtful because of the credential problems. But right. He served in a number of posts. And, you know, he was...
And he helped us ring in the new year.
Some of us. I wasn't watching.
No.
But also, he was at the Manhattan Institute, right? So, again, it's the ideology. And if we think of the figureheads that Trump is installing or attempting to install, that's the point. The point is the message, because they know that in the grand scheme of things, a couple of years is a very short period of time to actually get the big picture things done.
Robert.
I mean, I think it comes down to loyalty. I mean, yeah. It's who is not going to stand up to Trump. It's not a question of having somebody who's going to provide good and honest advice and counsel. It's going to be who's going to do whatever Donald wants. I mean, this whole thing, this whole cabinet, I call it the orange jumpsuit cabinet. I think over time, you know, it'd be interesting to track how many of the folks.
Not a kind thing to say.
I'm just true to my word. It also explains why Trump is pushing the Senate to give up on their constitutional authorities and allow for recess appointments, because he knows that some of these choices are so bad. All right, think about a choice for the single most important cabinet position in my mind is the Secretary of Defense. And the choice is so bad that even his lapdogs in the Senate are barking.
Yeah.
And again, you know, only Donald could make such a poor decision that the feckless GOP senators are already balking. And this is on top of a couple of other choices that people are going, wow, you know, this is crazy, crazy Trump. Back to Fred's, you know, comments, the Secretary of Defense runs a huge bureaucracy, but is also, at least in my mind, is on par with the Secretary of State as far as the advancement of our international diplomacy efforts, whether we like it or not. This is where American strength and power comes from. This is where our industrial might shows itself. And you're putting a platoon sergeant in charge of this really...
He was a platoon leader. He was actually a lieutenant.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Did I say sergeant? I didn't mean to insult the enlisted leadership.
I was amused that as you were saying most of that, you were holding your head.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for the last week, I've been holding my head a lot.
I am a glass half full guy. And to know that someday that it's a possibility,
Joe, that's not beer. Just
that,
letting
that
you know.
as a talk show host, I could go on and become Secretary of Defense. That's pretty good. The possibility exists.
Yeah, and the fact that he makes Tom Cotton look like a more viable choice just says so much to me about this choice.
Okay. So we're going to take a break in just a minute. But you talked about recess appointments. Is there any chance that won't happen?
I think this is the first big test of how strong the Constitution is going to be. because if the GOP Senate gives him recess appointment, then I think it's a sign pretty much that whatever he wants is going to happen.
Yeah, I think if Senator Scott of Florida emerges as the majority leader, there is probably a 50-50 chance that this could be done. And what is unique, I mean, recess appointments have been made down through time by administrations. What is unique in this one, in essence, is that President Trump is asking the Senate to do a minimum of a 10-day recess early, so he can appoint people who would be serving for the rest of the Senate's term.
And remember, Hegseth, too, was floated for the head of the Veterans Administration.
Yes. Right.
And his views on privatization, the level of care for veterans, was so controversial that it was a non-starter.
Right. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with our panel. We welcome you. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Ambassador Fred Hoff, Bob Griffin, and Sarah Rogerson, we welcome you. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let's get to some of the letters. James writes, "It's troubling to me that democratic values are increasingly couched as being the purview of elites. Even Democrats are participating in this brand of Orwellian doublespeak. Is there a way for Democrats to engage in post-election self-analysis without compromising their deeply held values? Republicans have no problem sticking to their core principles that voters be damned." All right.
Well, it is interesting that
I'll make that rhetorical.
That this defense secretary nominee went to Princeton undergrad and then Harvard graduate school.
Yeah.
So, like,
yes,
not that that's a bad thing. It's just, you know, they kind of ran
it's
on.
It's not non-elite.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
But we've said on the show before. Both Harvard and Yale Law, I think, have done a remarkable job in screwing this country up. And I don't think that they're held accountable for that as much as they should, especially if you look at the makeup of the Supreme Court.
Terry Gibson, we're sorry. Okay.
Well, but Terry's not responsible for either Harvard or Yale Law.
No, absolutely.
But there is this lock. I mean, there is this seemingly lock on these key positions, which is, you know, I've said before, I really do think that there is a there's a significant challenge of class in this country that is going to come back and bite us on the rear end at some point in time.
Let's go to this letter from T, who says, "Would like to hear you discuss the scheme to avoid pesky Senate confirmation hearings by making recess appointments. In that case, no need to worry about qualifications." Well, we talked about that before the break, a preview of this administration's contempt for the Constitution. So
yeah,
we gave it a 50-50. Right?
Yeah, there is a clause in the Constitution covering this. I actually looked it up this morning. It's Article 2, Section 2, Clause 3. It's very brief. It says the president shall have power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session. When the Constitution was put together, people traveled by carriage. When the Senate went on recess, it would take days and weeks to reconvene it. And this is why the president was given the power to make these sort of interim appointments if an office went vacant. It's been used much more often in recent years. And what President Trump basically wants to do is have the United States Senate declare a recess very early after convening in 2025 so that he can go ahead and make appointments that will last into 2026.
Matt writes, one of the most well-known failings of the first Trump administration was lack of preparedness and the overvaluation of loyalty above all else. The cabinet picks so far, the second time around, represent a doubling down on that failure from the first term. Essentially, with Trump, his belief that everything begins and ends with him alone, the cabinet picks indicate that he is, in essence, nominating himself for all of the posts, and by draining the House and Senate to fill his cabinet, he's really tripling down on the failure. Well, you go right on ahead, Mr. Trump. We will enjoy watching the failure for a second time, writes Matt.
I think Matt has a good point. And look, Donald Trump won this election. He has the absolute right to nominate people who are loyal to him, who believe in his policy priorities. But as chief executive, as commander in chief, he owes it to himself to appoint qualified people who can push back when necessary, who can help inform decisions, and the fact that he doesn't seem to be looking for that is potentially very troubling.
But again, none of this should come as any surprise. I mean, this is what he said. I mean, this is all part of the 2025 playbook. I mean, we sit here and sort of, you know, shake our heads at it, but this is completely in keeping. And again, he's going to do to the country what he's done through his entire business career. He's going to run it into the ground, and then he'll walk away. And you know, I don't, you know, we'll see what kind of messes is around at the end. The other thing too is that, you know, if you think about the recess appointments, it gives him an opportunity to really put into place. There are people out there that are even more incompetent and vile than some of the people that he has already named. And if he gets the right to do a recess appointment, and if the Senate, you know, bends to his wishes, it's going to these conversations are minor compared to what I think will happen.
We are just a reminder that President Biden will be meeting with President-elect Trump this morning. Trump just landed in D.C. and is on his way to the White House now and is expected to be meeting with Biden as well as GOP leaders. We go back to the letters. Kenneth writes, what does this appointment of a platoon leader mean to all the senior military leaders in the Department of Defense? Will we begin to see early retirements of ranking admirals, generals, and other important military leaders?
I would think the opposite. I may be speaking out of turn, but I think anybody who I know people in high-ranking positions in the United States military, and they swore an oath, and they will keep it.
Yeah, and I, you know, to be honest with you. This fellow, having been a platoon leader, really doesn't count against him. I mean, John F. Kennedy commanded a patrol boat. Abraham Lincoln was briefly a member of a militia. You know, one doesn't have to be a general, as we've had for the last 4 years as Secretary of Defense. But ideally, you would nominate to this position somebody steeped in national security affairs and somebody who has had some experience running a large and complex organization. And we clearly don't have that here.
This brings us right.
I'm sorry, but Joe,
ahead.
let's keep on this one for 1 second. You know what we I think now is the time we introduce the other issue of the loyalty panel.
Yeah, that's exactly where
okay.
I was going.
Okay, do you want to go ahead and...
Okay, I'll give a backup, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll come in and we'll discuss it. But the background on this is an exclusive story from the Wall Street Journal that this is a draft executive order that has been seen by the Wall Street Journal, where President-elect Trump would create a board to purge generals. If an executive order is enacted, it could fast-track removal of admirals. The Trump transition team is considering this draft that establishes a warrior board of retired senior military personnel with the power to review 3- and 4-star officers and to recommend removals of any deemed unfit for leadership. If Donald Trump approves the order, it could fast-track the removal of generals and admirals found to be, quote, lacking in requisite leadership qualities, unquote, according to a draft of the order reviewed by the Wall Street Journal. But it could also create a chilling effect on top military officers, given the president-elect's pass bow to fire, quote, woke generals, referring to officers seen as promoting diversity in the ranks at the expense of military readiness. As commander-in-chief, Trump can fire any officer at will, but an outside board whose members he appoints would bypass the Pentagon's regular promotion system, yep, signaling across the military that he intends to purge a number of generals and admirals. So with that background, we'll take a quick break, let that sink in. It may take a minute, and we'll come back and discuss it right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this 13th day of November, 46 minutes past 9 o'clock. I'm Joe Donahue. Ambassador Fred Hoff is here, Sarah Rogerson, and Bob Griffin. We welcome you. Right before the break, we were talking about a Wall Street Journal exclusive where the president-elect has drafted an executive order that would create a board to purge generals. This is just a draft, mm-hmm, and is in the works. So this is being floated. I think it's safe to say. We started off our conversation in talking about the president-elect's intention to nominate Pete Hegseth, a veteran and Fox News host, to be his next Secretary of State, to bring those two stories together. If confirmed by the Senate, it would be Hegseth who would be key in implementing the findings of the Warrior Board's review. The Trump team wants to do major reforms at the Defense Department, particularly around the size of the joint staff, according to a person with knowledge of the transition. All right, Fred, we'll start with you.
Okay. Believe it or not, there is some precedent for this, although it is probably not a good analogy. When World War II was opening up, the Army Chief of Staff, General George C. Marshall, convened a board to identify and get rid of Senior Officer Deadwood in the United States Army and open up potential advancement to more junior officers, and people like Lieutenant Colonel Dwight Eisenhower. But it's not clear, to say the least, that this proposed Warriors Board has the same objective. It appears there have been reports that one of the objectives here is to identify general officers who have been involved one way or the other in diversity training, okay? Immediately under the microscope, I would suspect, would be the superintendents of the Military Academy, the Naval Academy, and the Air Force Academy. General officers do not make diversity policy at the national level. They implement training consistent with policy directives given to them by their civilian superiors. And I think clearly there's a danger here of senior officer corps becoming politicized by this process, and this itself is a grave danger to combat capability and effectiveness. And this is why the president, whether he knows it or not, needs a strong and powerful Secretary of Defense to push back on some of these ideas.
Sarah?
Except that's not what he wants. So in a couple of articles discussing the executive order, we're reminded that Trump once said something like he wanted generals like Hitler had, who do not challenge him, who do not tell him what he wants, who do not tell him what he doesn't want to hear, and who do not stand in the way of using the military to crush his political opposition. And in October, that was reported by The Atlantic in October. And then on the campaign trail, he pledged to remove quote-unquote woke generals and eliminate diversity programs in the military. And then last but not least, we have, there's two things. John Kelly, a retired Marine Corps general who served as Trump's chief of staff, said Trump was an authoritarian who fell, quote-unquote, into the general definition of fascist. And Mark Milley, a retired Army general who served as Trump's chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, told journalist Bob Woodward that Trump was, quote-unquote, fascist to the core, end quote. So these are people who served under Trump, who are generally respected in their positions in the United States military, and who are identifying Trump as a fascist, an authoritarian fascist. So that's what he wants.
Yeah, so a couple points. And the comparison that Fred raises is interesting about past precedent. I would note that there's also an international past precedent with the communist Russia putting commissars, political commissars, in every unit, which degraded the military capacity of the Soviet Union in order to ensure loyalty. And this is, Joe, this is, you know, sort of linking this with some of the prior conversations. This is where you see something like the feckless Senate saying, of course, we'll disappear for 10 days, maybe go to Cancun with Ted, and allow recess appointments for a year, which is would allow people like Michael Flynn. Remember Michael Flynn?
I do.
You know, part of the felon crowd. To sit on this quote warrior board unquote. The warrior board in my mind is an attempt to circumvent the structures and protections that are in place right now to ensure that the military leadership is loyal to the Constitution and the country first rather than the individual. And again, we're talking about a man who we've just reelected back to office that fermented an insurrection, and has stated that it's his desire to use the military domestically in contravenience with posse comitatus and established democratic principles, which also ties back with why would you put somebody of questionable competency in charge of the military other than the fact that that person also supports those roles. So this all sort of links in with I think a very purposeful attempt from this administration to undermine the military readiness of this country in order to replace it with loyalty to the person, not the country.
So my, just remember the glass half full part that I mentioned before?
Yes.
So
quarter full now, maybe?
It's sloshing around a little bit. But let me ask the question about, this does seem to be a trial balloon, right? I mean, this does seem to be, it's a draft. It was leaked to the Wall Street Journal. It was sent out. It's being discussed. So does it become reality?
Do you think that Trump is going to honor the constitutional limits on presidential terms? Do you think? Is it a trial balloon? Yeah, it's a trial balloon. But does he care who opposes it?
Right.
You know, and again, we haven't even talked about the fact that this dude has supposed gross immunity given to him by the Supreme Court. you know, if you believe that there is a chance of, you know, him only serving one more term and there being an election, then maybe it is a trial balloon. Or if you look at it and say everything this guy has pointed to is that he's going to hold on to power for as long as he can, and he's going to do everything in his ability to ensure that the federal government can't intercede in the future, then no, this is just he's tossing it out there. He's seeing where people are going to complain. He's going to push it through, and then he's going to punish the people who complained.
Yeah. You float it to see who's loyal, and then you use it to kick out everybody who spoke out against it. We're not going to see like a million military march on this.
Right.
You can't.
Yeah, and look, this potential initiative, which may well come about, in my view, runs the risk of demoralizing our officer corps, of which women are now a major part, and demoralizing them for nothing. Look, we can acknowledge Donald Trump has been elected, and many of Donald Trump's supporters want to see diversity training and the like de-emphasized. Some of them want it done away with entirely. There are ways for Donald Trump to do this in a rational, gradual way if he thinks that this reflects the opinion of a majority of Americans and the will of Congress. To take a sledgehammer to the officer corps like this is, I'm afraid it's something that our adversaries around the world would welcome.
And can we go, I mean, let's pull a thread for a second back to Hesketh, right? He's come out very strongly saying that women don't have that don't have a role in the combatant commands other than support, which means that if he's put in place and this quote warrior board unquote is established, then women are going to hit a very shallow glass ceiling about promotion. So they're not going to be able to seek promotion to the higher office, given the fact that command and combatant command and role in combat plays such a large role in promotion. So again, this whole thing links together. And you know, we're spending a lot of time talking to the military today. I can tell you that a lot of what we're talking about, I expect to see even worse with the Department of Justice coming forward. Yeah. But again, I can't say that I'm surprised, Joe. This is, it was all part of the playbook.
Right. None of this was held too close. I mean, if you say we're going to get rid of the woke generals, this is how you do
right.
it. I mean, you know.
And let's talk woke generals for a second. I mean, the role of the military if you think about integration and equity in this country, it was Eisenhower who led to the racial integration of the military.
It was Truman.
Was it Truman?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Truman.
Yeah.
And that was huge for this country, at a time when we were dealing with massive institutionalized racism. It was the military, the U.S. military that showed the way. The idea of opportunity and advancement. And remember, we lock in an awful lot of advantages to our veterans. In fact, it's damn near impossible to get a federal job now if you're not a veteran because of hiring preferences. Mm-hmm. So when you start to think about all of these elements, and you start to think about, you know, sort of this weeding out process or this filter of loyalty, this isn't going to just impact the military. This is going to be impacting the federal workforce, whatever's left of that. But also, if you start to think about what we're doing in our hiring of law enforcement with veteran preference, all of a sudden that you see these elements starting to creep into key elements of our life and elements that we have always felt were at least politically neutral, and that there was a sense of equal justice.
And in the military, this would be a grave self-inflicted wound. Our ability to shoot, move, and communicate in a vastly superior way these days owes much to the fact that that women now play a major role in the military. And why we would do this to ourselves escapes me.
Well, except for the incompetent little men that couldn't get promoted, that now see an opportunity to get promotion.
Kindness, Bob. Kindness.
No, I have no problem with that one.
Yeah,
that's good. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have much more to discuss, and lots to discuss, and we'll get to letters and all that good stuff right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Playing great music this morning as a way to wish our engineer, Mike Bowen, a happy birthday. It's his birthday mix. So there you go. If you want to go to wamc.org/roundtable, you can see the playlist there.
And every Wednesday could be Mike's birthday if he plays Dropkick Murphys.
Yeah, yeah, always good stuff. Very, very good. All right, it is 10 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Wednesday morning, and a lot more to discuss. Let me get to some of the letters, because Bob said, what are they saying? and I think that's probably good for you all to know exactly what our listeners are saying. I think this is plain old revenge as advertised for all the military advisors who criticized him. That from Carolyn. Then we go to Carol.
Yep.
I appreciate the reading of the Constitution about recess appointments. Does the word, I'm telling you, all of you, just dust off your Constitution. You're going to need it.
I keep it with me wherever I go.
I have it on my desk. I have one in my bag and I'm in my desk. You just keep it around. Not dust it off. They have beautiful copies now, too, if you want to, like, upgrade. There's some really beautiful editions of it, you know,
including one in a Bible that you could buy from Trump.org. I mean, if we're gonna pander, let's pander here, Joe.
I appreciated the reading of the Constitution. Does the word "during" offer any restraint on Trump? The president can appoint if positions become vacant during a recess. These positions are vacant before any recess.
No, this wording per se, I don't think would impose any limitations on the president just by virtue of the word "during." What is different here is that the president wants the Senate very, very, very early in the 2025 session, ideally in January, to declare a recess of at least 10 days, so that he can appoint all of the members of his cabinet, and perhaps some of the deputies and undersecretaries as well.
Does that also include judicial appointees?
It can include judicial appointees, I believe. I believe during the Eisenhower administration, there were a couple of Supreme Court justices who received vacancy appointments who were subsequently confirmed.
Ambassador, doesn't it depend on what the definition of "is" is?
That's absolutely it always does.
Actually, this is wild. I almost said I love when Trump is president, but I don't mean it. I think there's something that intellectually.
It's a good attitude, though.
There's something that's intellectually stimulating about when Trump is president, because you.
Well, it's like a big Rubik's cube. You're just moving it around, trying to get everything together.
You know, my little pocket Constitution doesn't open to these pages very easily because. You don't usually have to look at those parts.
It shouldn't involve origami, but does.
So it's kind of cool, though, that the recess, so it's Article 2, Section 2, Clause 3 called the Recess Appointments Clause. In the Federalist Number 67, Alexander Hamilton refers to the recess appointment power as, quote, nothing more than a supplement for the purpose of establishing an auxiliary method of appointment in cases to which the general method was inadequate, end quote. So there are two textual issues that arise when interpreting the Recess Appointments Clause. The first is the meaning of the phrase, the recess of the Senate. And the second textual issue is what constitutes a vacancy that, quote unquote, may happen during the recess of the Senate. So if the words may happen are interpreted to refer only to vacancies that arise during a recess, then the president would lack authority to make recess appointment to a vacancy that existed before the recess began. For over two centuries, the Supreme Court did not address either of these issues. And then it goes on and on and on. So we're going to get really familiar with the case of the National Labor Relations Board versus Noel Canning. Wow. Poor Noel.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that what the founders did not intend was that a Senate recess would be used as an instrument to fill a cabinet. Okay, what they intended was to give the president some power. Say the Senate is on recess. And the president has already nominated someone to be ambassador to Beijing. That person has not yet had a hearing, is not yet confirmed. The Senate is on recess. There is an emergency. And the president says, I need to have my man in Beijing. So I'm going to do a recess appointment for ambassador XYZ. That's what it's intended for, not to provide the president the blanket ability to get his people into office without constitutional review, the advice and consent of the Senate, which is mandated by the Constitution.
It's pretty slick too, because there's nothing that says that he couldn't do this multiple times. So if they're gonna give up their rights, you know, that if they're going to give away our rights to Trump, what stops them from doing it again next year and the year after and the year after? I mean, this is just it's purely designed to circumvent the Constitution.
Right.
Period.
Get it done as quickly as possible and do what you want to do.
It opens the doors for like Kennedy. I mean,
RFK.
For his point, people who that Trump knows that, you know, are going to face a stiff headwind from the majority of the Senate.
And look, like the Warriors Board, this is something that's entirely gratuitous.
Yeah.
Okay. The whole process for hearings, for confirmation, has been streamlined considerably over the years, and the biggest problem in this process has not been the ability of Congress to move. It's been slowness on the part of the executive branch to tee people up for confirmation. So if President Trump is ready to go, if he's got his cabinet lineup filled out, he can, through normal procedures, get the hearings and up and down votes pretty quickly.
I want to just go to a couple more letters, and then we'll move on to topics before our bottom of the hour break. Jordan writes, is it just me or is Trump appointing people to fly the plane that don't know what flying is? Even the appointees that are picked from governmental positions don't have a record that proves that they know what they're doing now or how to do their new job. Then we go to Denise. Every selection Trump has made is just a puppet, no experience necessary. They will be told exactly what to do by a representative from Project 2025. The plan is in motion, and it has been for a long time. Finally, John says, is Trump actively working for America's adversaries, putting a low-experienced U.S. Army captain in charge of 1.3 million soldiers because he has a nice face and works for Fox? Bad idea. A captain commands a company-sized unit of 60 to 200 soldiers. That from John. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Want to go back to a couple of other things. there is so much to talk about, and we're learning new things here. So I just want to try to rein in, you know, bring in as lasso as much as we can to talk about it, because I think these are important to know about. So we learned yesterday that President-elect Trump picked Tesla CEO Elon Musk and biotech company founder Vivek Ramaswamy, a former Republican presidential candidate, to lead an effort to cut spending, eliminate regulations, and restrictive federal agencies. They did that by adding a governmental department. The name of the department is DOGE.
Dodgy. I think it's pronounced Dodgy, isn't it?
No, it's Doge.
No, Doge, Dogecoin. Like Doge.
No, it's Dogecoin.
It's Dodgy. It's Dodgy.
Okay.
We call it Dodgy.
Your pronunciation may vary, but Trump said in a statement Tuesday night that Ramaswamy and Musk, the wealthiest person in the world who oversees six companies, would lead what the president called the Department of Governmental Efficiency, or DOGE. The group's mandate is to streamline government bureaucracy, the president-elect said. DOGE will operate, this is important to know, folks, DOGE will operate outside of the federal government, Trump said, and will work with the White House Office of Management and Budget to implement its recommendations. Musk isn't expected to become an official government employee, meaning he likely wouldn't be required to divest from his business empire.
And would not be held accountable to ethics. Go ahead.
Trump gave Musk and Ramaswamy a deadline of July 4th, 2026, amid the nation's semi-quincentennial celebrations, and just months before the midterm elections, to complete their work. A smaller government with more efficiency and less bureaucracy will be the perfect gift to America on the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. I am confident they will succeed.
Yeah, in fact, no new government department has been established. Okay,
called a department.
It's called a department.
Because otherwise, you just have
DOGE. I know it has, but it has no statutory authority. It has no appropriation. It has no nothing except the.
Meaning no budget.
Except the two guys who were who were named to produce this this body of recommendations. You know, to be honest with you, I'm a lot less concerned about this than I am with the issue of how the Department of Defense is going to be run over the next few years. I don't even rule out the possibility that these two guys can produce a body of reasonable recommendations. We'll see, but if this is enough to keep them busy for the next couple of years, so be it.
Well, it should have been an office, but then it would have been Oogie, which is kind of how I feel about Elon Musk to begin with. You see, I don't share your optimism, Fred. I think this is an incredibly dangerous precedent. This idea of setting this outside of government but treating it as having the power of government circumvents all of the safeguards, all of the rules that are put in place on purpose in order to ensure things like ethics, legal procurement, the fact that you don't have a personal conflict of interests, for instance, like maybe you're looking to make sure that your billions of dollars of federal money doesn't have constraints to it. These two have just enormous conflicts of interests, and they should be vetted. And this goes back to the earlier conversation. if you want them to play a role in the administration in a senior capacity like this at a cabinet level, make them go through the process, make them open up their books, make them show everybody where their money is, where their conflict of interest is, let them show everybody where they have ties, so that we understand the biases that they bring to the position.
Yeah, just bear in mind that they do not have the power to add or subtract, to hire or terminate. They will come up with a body of recommendations. Now, yes, I would much rather see, if we're going to take something like this approach, a bipartisan commission staffed with able, knowledgeable people coming up with recommendations by sometime in 2026. I think that approach would be much more practical and much more likely to produce actionable steps. I doubt.
Okay, but
I'm not terribly optimistic about this, incidentally. I just don't think it's necessarily as harmful as some other things.
But Fred, where I disagree is that, with a liberal use and with an extended use of executive powers.
I don't want to say liberal anymore.
exactly, Joe. It's horrible playing bridge now because I can't even use the word Trump. But with the idea that he's going to take these recommendations, he's going to implement them, he's going to defend himself from lawsuits under the immunity powers given to him by the Supreme Court. He will be able to institute the cockamamie changes that these two clowns are going to recommend, in ways that will so damage the government that it's not able to recover.
So let me just go step back for a moment,
and that's being kind.
We don't know exactly what will happen here, although we do know that a central part of this campaign, especially from Ramaswamy, although Trump has called for the abolishment of several of these as well, among the agencies that Ramaswamy is looking to eliminate, the Education Department, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Those seem important, mm-hmm. but just throwing that out there.
I think we can all agree that there's a lot of waste in government. That's just part of government.
Yes.
So there's nothing wrong with identifying experts to suggest ways to reduce that waste. It's just that they already exist and they're not these two people. So choosing these two people is also another smack in the face of working class conservative voters, because what you can also bet a lot of money on, a lot of Dogecoin on, is that the social safety net will be recommended to be unknitted, untethered, deconstructed, torn apart. These two people don't care about poor people except to the extent that they can help make them rich.
Yeah, and look, if they produce a body of recommendations that mirror Ramaswamy's dreams of what the federal government should look like, no FBI and so forth, I think it would be interesting, to say the least, to see the president of the United States try to implement these things.
Isn't it interesting too that Ramaswamy, who's now playing a senior role for Trump, is looking to defund law enforcement, defund the police. I mean, and this is every criminal's dream, right? To be able to kill the organizations that would actually hold them accountable.
We have two letters here. One is from Bob, who says the panel...
I was typing really fast.
Yeah, I know. You were trying your hardest. The panel is reacting to Trump's power grab with recess appointments as if his nominee is going through the normal advice and consent process won't make any difference in the quality of the successful nominees. Given the spinelessness of the Senate Republicans, I don't see it mattering a bit, except that it will speed up the inevitable of appointing these unfit loyalists. Then we go to Quad. We have to think about who is behind the curtain as Trump speaks. He is simply not smart enough or interested enough to care about the ramifications of his actions. So who is pulling his strings? Stephen Miller? Elon Musk? A question left for us to think about. And then one final letter before we go to a break. We will then return and wrap up on this edition of the Roundtable panel. Sherry writes to us and says, Bob and Sarah are amazing panelists. But Fred is being a bit too reasonable for my liking today.
Just trying to be kind.
He is the kind ambassador.
The ambassador, exactly.
The ambassador of kind.
Trying to be diplomatic.
Sort of his job.
All right. Hold tight. We'll be back in
Thanks, Sherry.
A bit right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Sarah Rogerson, Bob Griffin, and Fred Hoff with us this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we've got about 15 minutes or so to wrap up and to get to some letters and also talk about some other things that are going on here that I think are important to talk about. First, we go to Bob's letter, who says, another Bob, I think you've identified the problems, so now what do we do about it? Well, I don't know. Give us time. I don't know.
That's tomorrow's panel.
Yeah. It's just a weekend. Give us a couple minutes.
But we are bobbing along right now.
Well, this is the stuff that keeps government lawyers in business. I mean, there's going to be a lot of ink spilled, I've heard someone say recently.
Figuring this out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in all these confirmations, I mean, we've got a long, 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 long tradition in this country of the United States Senate defending very vigorously its own prerogatives. And it will be interesting to see if the Trump movement is powerful enough to overcome that.
So, what's your litmus test on that, Fred? Would it be Scott being elected as the majority leader?
That would be a pretty good indicator. What I'm reading is that Senator Thune is the one most likely to emerge as majority leader, and I think he'd be inclined to defend the Senate's prerogatives, and push back on some of this stuff. I would like whether he's confirmed or not. I would like to see the Secretary of Defense nominee go through some very 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 rigorous committee hearings and floor debate.
It's going to be vote by vote, I think, irrespective of who is the majority leader. Because look at what happens with the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
It's vote by vote, case by case, how conservative appointed Supreme Court justices. I mean, you start to see a pattern after a bit. So we won't know, but the pattern will hit at just the right time for Democrats, which is the midterm elections.
And nominations occasionally get withdrawn. You know, if the president hears from the new majority leader, whoever it is, presumably Senator Thune, that Mr. President, your SecDef nominee just isn't cutting it. I've got 47 Democratic votes against, and I can count perhaps five or six Republicans that just can't go this far for you. So let's figure out a face-saving move here.
Robert writes to us.
There you go,
Bob.
Yes.
How much did the previous Trump administration cut the State Department budget? Diplomacy is more important than the Defense Department. That from Robert. Then we go to Russ. The panelists just mentioned that there is no question that there is a lot of waste in government. I believe that was
me.
You. I cannot disagree more. Where is the waste? Arguably, the place where you can most find waste in government is in spend it or lose it funding. But compared to the private sector, with its excessive and bloated CEO and mid-level salaries, the waste is minimal. Government is, in reality, involves a far more efficient use of funds than does nearly all private sector equivalents.
Yeah, I didn't say government wastes more than private sector.
Right.
But that being said, where government wastes a lot is in, this is my beef, emergency procurement contracts that do go to private vendors. And that's not the only place. There's where the rubber hits the road in terms of policy, fiscal policy for conservatives or Trumpers, conservatives, liberals, and leftists is how the money is spent and through which vehicles and where it actually goes and how it's tracked. I mean, the levels of fraud in lots of large government spends, including Medicare programs, you'll see it where private industry is manipulating government failure to clamp down on loopholes. So it's a joint project of government and the private sector to waste the people's money. It's just that only the government has the power to tax that from us.
So let's talk about health. We go to Q. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., one of President-elect Donald Trump's advisors on health, who is now taking aim at the agency's oversight on many fronts, that agency being the FDA. So we know a lot about this as far as what RFK has been saying since he began his attempt to run for president last year. He's been unflinching in his attacks on the Food and Drug Administration, but especially in recent weeks, saying he wants to fire agency experts who have taken action against treatments that have sometimes harmed people or that teeter on the fringe of accepted healthcare practice. How much influence Mr. Kennedy will have in President-elect Donald Trump's next administration still remains unclear, with some suggesting that he could act as a White House czar for policy over several federal health agencies. Mr. Trump has voiced support for Mr. Kennedy in recent weeks, saying he will let him go wild on health, quote unquote. In his acceptance speech, Mr. Trump reiterated his support for Mr. Kennedy's involvement on health matters in the United States. Some of Mr. Kennedy's priorities are relatively standard, such as focusing on the health effects associated with ultra-processed foods. Yet others threaten to undermine FDA authority to rein in inappropriate medical treatments or to warn about products that can damage the public health. This from the New York Times. A spokesman for Mr. Kennedy did not respond to requests for this piece. Days before the election, in a post on X that has received 6.4 million views, Mr. Kennedy threatened to fire FDA employees who have waged a, quote, war on public health. He listed some of the products that he claimed the FDA had subjugated to aggressive suppression, including ivermectin, raw milk, and vitamins, as well as therapies involving stem cells and hyperbaric oxygen. Some items that he singled out had become flashpoints for conservative voters during the coronavirus pandemic, including ivermectin, which was found to be an ineffective treatment against COVID. Dr. Robert Califf, the current FDA commissioner who spoke frequently about the dangers of misinformation in the COVID pandemic, said at an event on Tuesday that he was aware that experts were not always right, but he worried about them being broadly ignored. Dr. Califf said, "Not having experts, I think historically in every society, has been a case for demise of that society." And on that happy note, I turn it over to the panel.
Yeah, well, look, I guess the only thing I'd want to say about this is that if President Trump himself wants to stay healthy over the next 4 years, the only health advice he'll take from RFK Jr. Has to do with avoiding fast and processed foods.
Bob?
Well, I'm just thinking that maybe one way to get through the next 4 years is if we do replace fluoride in our water with psychedelics, maybe that's the way we can survive. I'll be interested to see what final role he being Kennedy plays. I question a lot of his science.
The whole brainworm thing.
There are so many issues there that we could go to.
I don't want to lose fact the worm died. The worm buried itself into his brain and then died.
It just shows just how rancid his brain is.
Just whatever the reason, I think it's important we know that. Go ahead.
Or off, I guess, would be a kinder word, Fred. Fred's looking at me disapprovingly. let's talk about the FDA for a second. I mean, one of the things that's so important is that when you go to the grocery store or you go to the pharmacy, that you have faith in the safety and quality of the food and medicine that we take, so that there is a consistency and that there are protections in place and that there is an understanding of the adverse impact and that medical procedures that are allowed have gone through rigorous testing. I mean, there's a public good there that is being ignored in all of these statements, and I think of issues like raw milk. I mean, there's a reason that rules were put in place for pasteurization of milk that we have forgotten. It's like the idea that that the vaccination for polio somehow is a bad thing because we have forgotten what the impact of polio was on children, and it all sounds great. Oh, you know, less regulations. You know, it's more efficiency. Really, it's not. It comes down to profits and continued absurd profits and lack of protection for the people at the expense of the pharmaceuticals and the elites. Again, you think about Obamacare. It's the idea that somehow those poor health insurance companies they were taken advantage of. No, they were killing people. I mean, they were killing people with their policies. That's where we're heading back.
I actually don't have a problem with the loosening of the psychedelics and mental health. I mean, there's a lot of science that's growing behind that. I do think government gets in the way of that, and that goes, back to the 60s and some hangover we have in the federal government about exploring new and different kinds of ways to treat mental health, mental illness and behavioral issues. But that is like maybe the only redeeming thing that I can find here. And even that, I mean, it has to do a lot with how much we're going to let big pharma and big farms influence the quality of our medication and our food. Because RFK can have all the weird ideas in the world. He doesn't get to just write a whole new rule book. But it's the influence and his ability to be influenced and Trump's ability to be influenced by the private sector that has, I think, the more damaging impact in the FDA, especially given the place that we're at with the impact of large-scale farming and the climate impact of that. We're just really going to see how the FDA, the CDC, and whatever's left of climate-related agencies, how they all kind of communicate with each other around these complicated issues.
We'll give you the last word. We're out of time. My thanks to everybody for being with us this morning. Sarah Rogerson, Bob Griffin, Ambassador Fred Hoff. We'll be back right after this.